Hello, everybody, and welcome to another week of MioI Out. I am your host, Christy Shaw, and I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Will.
Hello, Christy. Welcome back to Okanis Podcast Productions.
Thank you for having me.
Once again, wow, you had a good week so far?
Great week. Yeah. How about yourself?
Very nice. Love this weather, finally. Even when it's kind of rainy, it's still, you know, rain is always good. Rain's always good.
Yes. Yeah, we need that water for sure.
So today we're going to talk about people pleasing. Mm-hmm. Now, this is something that I've read into. I don't think I've ever considered myself a people pleaser, but I can understand how it could become not a problem, but maybe a Band-Aid.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And the reason why I want to talk about people pleasing is that it's kind of like the it's an unknown, hard to see, hard to sense type of Band-Aid solution that a lot of people don't address or notice because you're making everybody else in your world happy.
Yeah, right. So nobody sees the drawbacks to it. And unless you're in, I guess, once you start on that journey, right, then you realize it. Yeah, I'm pleasing everybody else but me, mm-hmm, right, when it comes to it.
And I think it's a lot of, when people come to that point in their life where they're thinking, you know, wow, I've done this for myself. I've accomplished that goal. I've done the things I thought I was supposed to do following those family lines and those career lines. And they realize that they're still not happy. And it can kind of be, I think, an overwhelming and hard to navigate realization for yourself to think, okay, where did I go wrong? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why do I not feel happy? I've accomplished these things. How did I get here? You know, you don't really feel like you've done anything wrong, but you know inside your body that something isn't settled.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's also comes down to almost how you, communicate with other people, right? Because, mm-hmm, in fact, this just came here. I came across a person such as this who didn't realize that her not saying no was causing problems in herself, mm-hmm, but she didn't see it, mm-hmm, right? She was wondering why she wasn't getting anything done, or she was always tired. She's not getting anything accomplished. And they said, well, when was the last time you said no to someone? If somebody came to you and said, I need this done, and you said, okay, I'll do it right away. And, well, I can't say no. Mm-hmm. Well, why not? Mm-hmm. Well, I can't. I said, you certainly can. Yeah. And at that, we were building something for the station, for the First Nation community-wise. And I said, well, that's why we're all here, so that you can say no, right? And she looked at me. I said, that's when I mentioned, well, you know, what you got to learn is create some boundaries. Mm-hmm. Boundaries. I said, yeah, you got to learn how to say no. You can say no, you know. Mm-hmm. And she said, So later on in the meeting, we're talking about this and that, and we said, well, we got to somebody to do this, and we got to do this, and she kind of said, no, I'm not going to do it. And we all laughed and said, good for you. It's exactly what we needed. So, yeah, so, that, you know, it's, again, respect everybody on their healing journey, but you won't know until you're at that point, mm-hmm, right? You could listen, you could read, but again, until you're ready, but also until you realize that there's a little crossed wire back there somewhere, right? Where is that? Why? Right? Mm-hmm. And I think that the time, like, everybody comes to that time when they say, why? Right? And not just metaphorically why, but an inside why, mm-hmm, right? Why am I like this? And that is the first step. Right?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. That's a huge first step. And I've always, when I'm walking alongside people, is I want them to understand themselves better than anybody else. It's not my goal to, make them think or believe that somebody else has all the answers. They're all within us. We just have to give ourselves the space and the time to fill in those blanks and to not use the things that have been kind of put into our minds and into our psyche about who we are and how we operate and why we do the things that we do. Mm-hmm. A lot of this people-pleasing tendencies does come from childhood. So of course, you know, whoever's taking care of you, your primary caregiver, and the fact that babies are cute is a survival mechanism, right? Mm-hmm. So babies, they laugh, they smile, their big chubby cheeks, you know, all of that is a survival. And, you know, as the child continues to grow, how does your primary caregiver respond to your needs once you maybe stop being baby and cute and you know,
right,
babbling and bubbling to now, okay, this is a toddler now and they've got needs. And so that changes the dynamic a lot of the time. And I know that a lot of, you know, parents and moms and dads are stressed and we're always learning, right? Like with every generation, we're always learning more and understanding more. And that's a good thing. And it's not meant to make people feel hurt or harm,
right?
Yeah. We can only do better with what we have today.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, thinking about what was some of the feedback that we got in our toddler years about crying, about having needs, about having wants. You know, there was a lot of narrative about not spoiling your kid too much and tending to them too much and sleep training where babies would just cry themselves to sleep and self-soothing till they basically became exhausted from crying or just giving up expressing their needs.
Right.
So all of these things are really, I would say, deep rooted. And I was talking with one of my people that I work with and you know, sometimes it can feel when we're healing, as her and I were talking, you know, it can feel so deep, like we're working right to the bone. I said, we're working right down to the cellular level, you know, and I said, and we're talking about, okay, aftercare. And I said, okay, so we were just, if you could imagine, we were just in surgery or we're still in surgery and we've got you cut open and we're looking at your bone and the marrow and your cellular level. I said, so make sure you don't let anybody come in without spiritual cleanliness just cleanliness in general, right? Because she said, I feel like I need to keep my space from everybody. I said, you do. You know, we need to be mindful of what do we bring in now to this environment in this, you know, healing type of journey that we're in? I said, so it's okay to have those boundaries, to not let just anybody in when we're busy trying to put ourselves back together.
Yeah. And this whole people-pleasing thing, looking into some of your notes, it's each time we talk about a topic, and like you said, you dig down, it comes down to those formative years as a toddler. Right, you go from the baby stage into that toddler when that toddler is starting to start to form its own psyche, its own basis, right? And that is so, I wouldn't say fragile, but so important that it's that child is fed positive, right? Mm-hmm. Because the negativity turns into people pleasing, into this, turns into that, right? And when I was having my family, I was doing my family thing, I didn't realize all that, you know. I wish I did. I really wish I did. And again, go back and change things. I can just do things better from here on in. But knowing what I do now, like, it would have been a lot different. But again, saying that part, you know, some of my siblings, they were teachers, and they, I guess, try their theories out on their kids on how to teach.
Okay.
Good or bad. Positive, negative. Like, some worked, some didn't. So, but again, that has... that helps form that child's psyche, right? Which, again, is very important. Mm-hmm. And again, these days, again, we're talking about generational. We're talking about indigenous, totally different. Like, there's a lot of indigenous people who will say, yep, I've got that connection. I go every day. And there's indigenous people who say, I've lost that connection. Right? Almost as human beings, we can say we've lost that connection to the earthers. Like our last podcast, we talked about the interference that just the phone brings, right? So we're trying to get away from that. But when it comes down to it, it's so important with the youngsters, with the little ones, right? It's just so important. And now that I'm a mushroom, I hold that so close, so dear. And not just my granddaughters, all the little ones, all and you know, the future generations.
Absolutely.
That, it's all about, it comes down to intergenerational healing, right? And I like that. We were talking before how intergenerational trauma. Ooh, right away. It's like, ooh, let's change that. Let's go to intergenerational healing.
Absolutely.
Right? And it's like, oh, yeah, we can handle this.
And I find that when I'm talking with people, when we're talking about, you know, some of their tendencies, maybe it's people pleasing or the others, if I know that they have kids, we'll touch on the relationship with the child. right? So if they're a people pleaser and they accept, you know, their disrespect and the boundaries being crossed, your kid is watching that happen. And I think the most hurtful thing is us as people pleasers or any of those other issues when we see our kids doing the same thing, you know, and you're like, why are you allowing people to treat you like that? And then you hear them even worse, kind of repeat what you said. It's okay. They didn't mean to. And to make excuses, right? Mm-hmm. And I've been there myself, you know, understanding, wow, I better learn and show my daughter what it means to stand up for herself and to say when something's wrong and bothering her unapologetically, but not just to hurt or harm people and just use pure anger, but in the hopes of coming to some sort of resolution, either, you know, we learn to have better boundaries or we learn to walk away from the person that's hurting or harming us. But I think the most important part is getting to that place of speaking up for yourself and saying when something's bothering you and we're moving through that hurdle of, especially if you have trouble with that, like if that's a barrier for you. I'm not saying, you know, start shooting at the hip and
and everybody's out to get you.
Yes. Yeah. And there's some that, you know, definitely know how to do that.
That's right.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Let's take this apart. People pleasing at its core. What does it come down to?
Right. So people pleasing at its core is, form of self-abandonment, and it's a learned coping mechanism rooted in the need for acceptance, love, and safety. It is the act of suppressing our own needs, emotions, and values to accommodate others. And if you could think about how often this can happen in relationships, in our family connections, and in our work, you know, it might surprise you to think about how often am I doing this? People-pleasing is the people-pleasing habit often comes from our childhood, from a deep mammalian need and desire to feel safe by keeping other people happy with us, because our brains link that external validation and approval with our own survival. People-pleasing can stem from a variety of reasons and often rooted in a combination of personal experiences and psychological factors. So these could include the fear of rejection, fear of low self-esteem, the desire for validation, and a tendency to avoid conflict. So if you're thinking about, is this something that I do? Remember that there's a saying that sometimes bothers me. and I guess I understand a bit of what it's there for. And it's to give some an individual some of their peace back. But Kiam, like, let it go. Like, just let it go and don't let it bother you and don't get angry. And I've been told that so many times. Yeah. And I started to realize that wasn't serving me. You know, I was denying myself my feelings. And because I work with so many different people, from families to couples, older generations, younger generations, I really, in my whole heart and being, see the benefit of encouraging people to express themselves and to helping people to become safe in their own body and own mind to be able to receive that type of information as well. So that way they don't feel like they're under attack and push back. So there's a lot happening there, but it's also very simple. Like, it's a very, very simple way of just, how do I communicate when I'm feeling disrespected or feel like I need to say no to something, mm-hmm. right?
And sometimes it's very easy to say it. It's very easy to hear it, but to actually do it, that's difficult. Really difficult. It's like when you're in a depressive state and somebody says, oh, accentuate the positive, you know, it's like, I can't even think about that right now, mm-hmm. right? And it's along the same lines in this, I guess, hey, pretty much.
It is. We need to stop denying ourselves our feelings and our emotions. And I when I think about kids too, they do express themselves. And I know it's hard when kids have tantrums. It's hard when kids are, you know, maybe crawling the walls and going in every different direction. So I understand that. And there's something that involves something different though than suppressing emotions. That involves more the discipline teaching ahead of the tantrum. Right. So to suppress emotions at that moment isn't helpful. You kind of have to do a little bit of work, you know, ahead of that before that happens. I was talking to a lot of different people, I'll say. I can always tell that I'm working with a people pleaser because I'll ask them that question. Do you know how to say no? Like, does the words leave your mouth?
Yeah.
And they won't even say no at that point, which is kind of funny to me, right? Because they know it's true. They also don't want to fight for it. So they'll stay quiet for a few minutes. And so I'll always practice with them. Like, this is a safe space. You can say no here. And I'm not going to get upset and I'm not going to make you feel like a bad person. But you do need to practice having those words leave your lips. And so that way you get used to it and you won't be so afraid to do it when you actually have to do it in real time. And sometimes it's like pulling teeth and people are saying, well, I have no reason to say no to you. And it's, you can just see how deep rooted in their body that they're struggling with that, even in a role playing kind of pretend situation. So if you've never said no before, practice it leaving your lips before you actually want to start saying no to things, like saying it out loud. And no is a complete sentence. So you don't have to add in your reason.
Why. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Because then we start to get into that justification. Not everybody really deserves our justification.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's in itself right there. That's the point right there. You don't have to justify yourself to everybody, just yourself.
Absolutely. So we'll go back a little bit into some of the common reasons for how people pleasing develops. So childhood experiences, particularly those involving trauma or neglect, can significantly contribute to people pleasing behaviors. I think neglect is also another one that, you know, sometimes it seems kind of like a lesser seeable issue in terms of trauma or trauma related experiences. But what happens is with neglect is that kids aren't given that internal voice of positivity or to help them work themselves through their problems. And so they're kind of left to come up with their own narrative about how the children perceive the situation. So fear of rejection and abandonment. So individuals who have experienced rejection or abandonment in the past can develop a deep-seated fear of it happening again. And that leads them to prioritizing pleasing others to avoid this potential loss. So if you were maybe left at grandma's house, regardless if grandma's house was safe, and that is a safe thing to do, right? If parents are going to be under the influence, that safety plan, we can't forget about the fact that kids can feel that sense of abandonment or rejection. Mm-hmm. And again, if we don't explain things to them, they come up with their own narrative and you don't have a control over that. So what are they putting in there as their belief about themselves? You know, maybe that they're not good enough or maybe that their needs are too great. And so they will close in often on themselves. This fear can manifest as a constant need for approval and a tendency to go along with others' wishes, even when it conflicts with their own. So that constant need for approval is something that you'll see a little bit with perfectionists too. So sometimes if we don't know that it's going to be something that is amazing and make everybody go, wow, we almost won't go for it unless we know it's going to be knocking out of the park, because it's that validation part. We're not doing it necessarily because we enjoy it. We're doing it for the validation. And again, you know, earlier when I was speaking about, you know, we might come to a place in our life when we're wondering, why are we doing the things that we do if we're not happy or fulfilled in our life? And so we did it for the validation and that need to feel like we've done something right. And I think kids really do need to hear what they're doing right instead of what they're doing wrong. And I think that's something that's common, like across the board with a lot of people. It's very easy to criticize and judge and to be fearful. And if you think about your brain and just how it works, if you input those seeds of fear and criticism, it's not going to help you to see. It's not going to help you to see things better or clearer or see solutions. You're basically kind of, it's a bit of an oxymoron, which is be fearful, be criticized, and also look for the best solutions and the best way to accomplish this task or situation. Instead of, if you think about the contrast, which is, okay, you did really well. Did you think about this? Have you thought about adding that? You know, that's okay that you make a mistake, right? We can fix it. What did you learn? What do you want to do differently this time? And encouraging that curiosity and that growth mindset into the child's brain.
Definitely, yeah.
Right. So low self-esteem and need for validation. People with low self-esteem may believe that they are not worthy of love or respect unless they constantly seek validation from others. So think about people that might, for them to be calm and to take care of themselves and to take a break and to have that rest. You know, there's a lot of people that won't do that because their whole existence and what they believe about themselves is that as long as I'm working, providing, and producing, that's where my value comes in, rather than just being valuable just as a human spirit as they are. They may believe that their own thoughts and feelings are not important and lead them to prioritize the needs of an opinion of others. So I think this is this can cause a lot of loneliness in people. And again, it's because we don't see it and it's hard for us to sense it. How could I explain this? I think there was a couple, what's his name? Robin Williams. Right. Comedian made everybody else laugh, right? Made everybody else happy. He was probably a people pleaser.
Okay.
Right. And so he always made sure he made others feel how he wanted to be treated. But from the outside, people probably thought, man, he's the happiest guy ever. He's got it together, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we don't check on people like that a lot of the times, right?
Okay.
So even the people that are happy and look like they have it together, maybe it's a bit of a mask. Maybe they're trying really hard to make sure that you're happy so that way they don't, there's this word that's been trademarked. It's called, it's kind of like outsourcing your own happiness, for lack of a better word.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, I can't be happy in my life, so I'm going to make sure you're happy in yours,
mm-hmm.
even if I continue to be unhappy.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. I understand that. Yeah.
So I think that brings to the idea of how do we help children and young people and, you know, adolescents as well. How do we teach them how to be happy within themselves? I think that's a really big and important question.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, even for myself, right? Like my daughter and I are very close. I'm trying to teach her that it's okay that mom's not happy right now and I'm feeling sad and I just want to be left alone. That doesn't mean that you've done anything wrong. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to bring mom cookies thank you for that. But go have fun and be free and color. Just because mom's sad doesn't mean that you have to come be sad with me or that you've done anything wrong. Cause she'll ask me that, did I do something wrong? And I say, what? Like, no, yeah. I'm in my own head.
Right.
Right. And I just need a little bit of time to decompress and then I'll come and, we'll come and color together or we'll play cards after.
Yeah. Cause if you don't, then your daughter can think that's her role.
Mm-hmm.
Like when mom's in her mood, it's my duty to go over and cheer her up or take over or whatever. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that turns into, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say issues later on, but mm-hmm. yeah, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that it's okay that she's happy and I'm not happy.
Right.
Right. Right? That she doesn't have to sit and be unhappy with me. She can go and play. And that's super healthy if you think about it. I mean, it's got to, you know, it's tough when everybody's all unhappy all at the same time, you know, and somebody has to kind of get the whole family kind of out of that groove, right? But I think what would be even easier is if we taught each other how to be happy on our own.
Yeah.
That way, if somebody's not feeling too good, they can have their time and then come back, you know, into their joy and happiness, but not have everybody kind of in that state because that's really heavy, mm-hmm. you know, and that does happen a lot.
That makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the next one is conflict avoidance. Now, this, of course, this makes total sense. Instead of getting into an argument, they say, okay, I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Even though you may have a valid reason to say no.
Conflict avoidance is so prevalent. And I'll justify it, I guess, or manage this belief here with balancing it with not just conflict, but like healthy conflict.
Right.
Right. Right? So not conflict just because you don't know how to communicate yourself in a better way other than using anger. And we're not talking about the same things here, right?
Right.
Having to use anger and build up the anger within you to say something, you have to be able to, you have to recognize that people on the receiving end are going to hear your anger and you're going to be received that way. And so that if you imagine all this energy kind of bouncing around, right? When oftentimes what we're really talking about or what the root of the problem is kind of like misperception or miscommunication, or we've created that, again, that own narrative of they did this against me and now I've got to figure out how to people please so that way I don't do that anymore. When maybe the person was short with you just because, I don't know, they came to work late, they couldn't really say hello, but it wasn't dismissive, right?
Yeah.
So conflict avoidance. The fear of conflict can be a major driver of people-pleasing behaviors. Individuals may go along with others' requests or opinions to avoid potential disagreements, even if it means sacrificing their own needs. And I'll add in, even if it sacrifices their own values. I really think that this is an important thing to teach our youth, because a lot of times, with bullying, bystanders, all of those things, if our kids and our youth don't know how to stand up, because they know when something's wrong, they inherently know. Sometimes as adults, we kind of can logicize things and intellectualize them to be okay. But kids really have a good understanding of the difference between right and wrong. But maybe what they don't have is a voice, and they haven't practiced saying what was wrong. And the first kind of instances where we do practice that is oftentimes with our parents, you know, mom, this is wrong. You shouldn't do that. And I take it offensively. Right. And then she learns that mom's going to be upset if I say that she's doing something wrong, even though I know it's wrong.
Right.
Right. So it's really, my daughter and I have been teaching her about even her and I having healthy conflict. And, I'll tell you, it has not been easy, but I believe that this difficult process of her and I navigating this mother-daughter relationship in a way that I really have never seen or like I'm pulling off of more of my work, right, and more of my understanding than what I was inherited by my family of how to have a relationship with my daughter. So this is really fresh stuff that we're working with. I'm really proud of her when she can say, you know, mom, what you did and what you said made me upset. And I say, okay, how come? Oh, and then she'll explain it to me. Well, she doesn't like it when I say to people that she's shy because she's quiet. And again, I was taught from an early age, you make sure you say hello and you let them kiss you on the cheek and, you know, give your granddad or grandma that you've never met before a big kiss on the cheek, and all of these things that were invading my personal privacy and, you know, making me step outside of my comfort zone. And my daughter's just crossed arms. No, I don't know who you are and I'm not giving you a kiss. Even when she says no to my dad, who is with her almost every day, sometimes she just doesn't want to get a kiss on her forehead. And we've both been like, okay, that's okay. And we don't take it offensively, like, oh, you hurt his feelings, you know. You know, you should do that. He's taking care of you, because that is not a good narrative to have in your mind. That excuses unwanted behavior, unwanted physical touch. And so as weird as it is for us to be doing this now, you know, I'm hopeful that in the future as an adult, you know, she'll be able to say no to things that she doesn't want to and not to feel bad about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And to have really good, healthy boundaries.
And have, like what some people say, the backbone to speak for herself. Mm-hmm. Right. And not let that slide, right? Because again, like we say, you are the most important thing, and that's what it's all about, is trying to raise independent people, right? Because the more independence, the better. And I'm not saying it's easy by any means, as you mentioned, right? You know, like right now, I'm thinking, I want to call my son, right? But again, it's looking back, I've noticed, or I can identify mistakes that I've made, unknowingly. And also I identify the results of those, right? So now, luckily, with my, well, it happens with my granddaughters, right? It's always, it's never too late. It's never too late.
It's never too late. And I would say like the kids are so profound in how quickly they can recover. And when we've made mistakes before, as long as we don't repeat them again, it's like you're just starting fresh, mm-hmm. you know, and there's so much freedom in that too, in that we don't have to stay stuck in the past about the things that we've done wrong or things we wish we could have done better. There's times where I've apologized to my daughter, you know, really, really genuinely heartfelt apologized. And she said, "It's okay, Mom." I'm like, "No, it's not okay. You know, give me a little bit more pressure, you know, don't be a people pleaser, burn it in, kiddo." You know? And we kind of laugh about it. Right. But in a sense, I'm being genuine. And in a sense, you know, she's ready. She's more ready to, okay, let's have fun now. Like, let's enjoy each other again. Now let's stop crying. We've worked through it. Okay. So yeah, kids are very resilient and it's not meant to, I don't say that in terms of, you know, continue to allowing adversity. I don't mean that. What I mean in the resiliency part is that if you put in the effort and the connection to help heal some of those pains that we have with them, they're resilient in that they don't want to continue to punish you once you've said you're sorry and you've stopped doing what it is that you don't want to do anymore. They're resilient in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're ready to move on. They're not going to hold it over your head and say, "Remember, you know, last year when you said this," right? They're ready to move forward.
Yeah. Children are amazing. They are a gift indeed. And we gotta love them day in and day out.
Yeah.
It's Mio Ayo. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back in 2 and 2.
Thank you.